Hey guys, what's up? It's your boy Neil here. I'm so excited to bring you this episode. In this episode, we've got none other than Dr. Hannah Correll, who is a neuropsychologist. She's an author. She comes on TV, and we've discovered and talked about various things, lots of topics ranging from what actually is neuropsychology, all the way going into different things such as her book, how to break up with friends, identifying toxic friends, and some of the patterns, the covert patterns that you need to look at and look out for, saying no, being assertive. So there's a lot of substance in this little podcast that we've done. I hope you really enjoy it.
I guess we're live. Thanks, Dr. Hannah, for doing this. I'm so excited. You're our second ever guest on the show.
And, thanks for having me now.
You know, we met through a mutual friend, Mateo, and, you know, we've worked together, and that's how we know each other. But just to give the viewers, listeners, a context of who you are. So you're basically an author, but also a neuropsychologist. You appear on TV and do all sorts of cool stuff. So I guess,
and I love that you didn't mention me. We met through a friend who's actually my dance partner at Salsa. So
right, and you do salsa.
So you mentioned that, you know, you have to mention that.
Absolutely. So you got so many things going on, right? How do you stay on top of all of them?
Oh God, I'm really tired.
Right.
No, I actually started dancing because that was how I kept work-life balance. So last year, I was starting lots of different businesses, the book, the app, my private practice, working in a hospital. And the first year is a nightmare. It's hard. It's really hard and it sucked. And this year I have distinctly set aside time to go, this is my time where I'm going to do something fun that has no negative impact. There's nothing I need to be responsible for. It's just pure fun. Wow. And that has helped a lot.
Wow, that's awesome. So how do you like prioritize, like, you know, say you've got to do your practice stuff, but also do your other stuff, like focus on books and things like that. Do you have like a morning thing? Do you plan out your day like that? Because I know you're pretty organized.
I'm kind of more of the fast and loose side than the people who are super organized. I think organizing does make a difference. But now I'll just turn my screen around. See my whiteboard there.
Wow.
I put monthly goals on my whiteboard, but that's probably as prioritized as I get, because you just have so many conflicting demands. Right. And I know that it is important to have a proper prioritization system. But for me, I am kind of putting my mental health as number one. And so I'm not giving myself a hard time if the priority triage system isn't perfect and if something slipped through the cracks. And I know the important stuff gets done, and my mental health is way more important than working, you know, to 11:30 at night every night. So for me, we talked about this before, like my Instagram and stuff, which I used to be really worried about. I'm not giving myself a hard time about anything anymore. I know that I will get the important stuff done. Yeah. And if I don't get it done, well, it mustn't have been that important. So mental health is the priority. That's how I prioritize.
Wow, that's really cool, actually. And, you know, I've been trying to practice some of that recently as well, because I have a few projects that are going on. And I'm so glad we're on the same page with that. Because the thing is, you know, especially when you have like 12 things happening at the same time, you know, I think it's very important. And that's why I asked you, how do you prioritize? And if you prioritize yourself first or your mental health, then automatically, you know, you can sort of make time for the things that are important, and the things that are not important, they sort of weed out themselves automatically. Mm.
I recently heard a great term. It's called revenge procrastination. Wow. And this is where, and I'm like, oh, I do this. This is where we stay up really late at night. So you go to bed at like 11 o'clock or whatever, and then you stay up for hours, like midnight, 1 a.m, 2 a.m, and you play on your phone, you listen to your audiobook, and you do all those nice, you watch TV, you do all those nice things that you want to do, because it's the only time of the night that you're alone and that you get to spend time just doing what you want want to do.
Yeah.
But then you pay for it the next day because you've stayed up till stayed up till 2 a.m. And I was like, oh, that's so great at the time. But then the next day I was exhausted. So it's like revenge procrastination, but then it hurts you in the long run. So if you can prioritize your life enough so that you don't have to detriment yourself in the long term by taking an hour for yourself at 1 a.m, like, can we not find an hour in our lives where it's not going to hurt us to do a bit of self-care? Like, you know, if you're doing revenge procrastination, that's probably a good sign that you're not prioritizing yourself enough.
Absolutely. That's such a good point as well. So, you know, just to understand a little bit more about what is it that you actually do, right? Like, as a neuropsychologist. Yeah, because it's such a like, you know, it can seem like it's an overwhelming term, you know, neuropsychologist.
What
does that mean?
It's like brain meets psychology. So we all think of like the traditional psychologist is this idea of you lay on the couch and you tell me about your dream, tell me about your father, tell me about your relationship with your mother. And somebody talks about their emotions for multiple sessions. Where the neuropsychologist is different to your traditional psychologist in that we look for issues with the brain. So we find out what part of your brain works really well, where are your strengths, and where might there be some weaknesses that you might need a little bit of help with to be the smartest version of yourself, the quickest version of yourself, the most effective version of yourself. So really getting the elite advantage on your own intelligence. So for people who are neurotypical, it's about enhancing their abilities. And for people who maybe have problems, it's about detecting things like autism, dementia, learning disabilities, all sorts of things like that.
Right. And so, you know, do you work with like varied group of people, you know, who come to you for, you know, for consultations and things like that? Or
So I work on a psychiatric ward in a hospital in Sydney. So there I work with people who have some pretty full-on mental health stuff that's gotten in the way of them being able to just do life. You know, they've gotten to the point where they've hit the wall and they can't get out of bed, and it's gotten to a point where they don't want to be around anymore. So we work on the psychology side of things, and we can also work on, you know, when you feel like you're in a bit of a brain fog and you're like moving through molasses and you just can't get anything done, and something takes that should take 20 minutes takes an hour, you know, that kind of stuff, because mood has that effect on our cognition. And then in my private practice, which I run in Cremorne, I do a lot of diagnosis of things like autism and ADHD, dementia. And one of the things we've realized is that a lot of people who are adults now maybe weren't picked up when they were children because it was a little taboo and stigmatized, and some kids slipped through the cracks. So now we have a lot of adults who've been going through life putting in lots and lots of effort, way more effort than everybody else, to put out the same quality work as everybody else. And they're high functioning and they do a great job, but it just costs them way more effort than everybody else does. And they're exhausted and burnt out. And it might be because there's an undiagnosed inattentiveness there that from ADHD, and they need a bit of help.
Right. So they haven't been diagnosed for all these years, right? And do you think they're still like taboo there even now, like in 2021, or not as much?
I wish I could say, Neil, like, no, no, there's no taboo anymore. But, you know, there still are issues with people who, I mean, I get clinicians who are really reluctant to give a diagnosis of autism, for example, because they're worried that it's going to negatively affect the child in their life. But really what we know is autism isn't a neurodisability, it's a neurodiversity. It's just a difference in the way their brain is wired. People who have depression have been found to be much more empathetic than people who haven't experienced depression. These are things that wire our brains differently. They don't necessarily damage our brain or make our brain deficient. They make our brain different. And that's not a bad thing, but it is still hard for the layperson or someone who hasn't experienced it to truly understand what it's like and what it means, and that it doesn't mean you're disabled, it just means you're different.
Right. So for a lay person like myself, you know, who's luckily hasn't experienced, you know, any of these things that we talked about, you know, how can I empathize better, or, you know, how should I, you know, because I just haven't met, you know, those many people that are, you know, either have ADHD or, you know, they have all these different sort of, as we discussed, you know, diversity, the neurodiversity. So what's a good way to, you know, not make it very obvious, but at the same time, you know, acknowledge that, you know, that the person may be different from yourself?
Yeah, that is a really good question, Neil. And I think the answer is, you know, to be human, to be real. So like if you imagined, I'm sure you go to the gym and you lift, you know, lots of heavy weights and you're doing your 1,000 reps, 1,000, 99, 1,000, you know. Imagine that you were going through life, like when you're at the gym and you lift, I don't know, you squat 100 kilos or you're lifting 100 kilos over your head as you do, Neil. Imagine that you were walking around society with a backpack that had 100 kilos in the back of it. And imagine that you were walking around society and somebody was flashing a light, a torch in your eye all the time, right up close to your eye. And imagine that somebody had a microphone, a big boom microphone, like amplifying their voice in their ear, screaming at you and saying that you were worthless and stupid. And then imagine that your t-shirt that you were wearing was made out of cactus prickles. You know, it would be really hard to function when you have all those things going on for you. And somebody might not have all of those things going on for them, but you can, you're like a human, you're a human, you would understand that would make life pretty hard. So it's sort of like a very literal example of what might be going on inside someone's head. And it's sort of like, well, hey, you don't need to know anything amazing or special to help those people or to understand them. You just need to be a real human being and just kind of be real and go, hey, I can see that this might be a bit tough for you. I want to help if I can. How can I help you? You can ask them, how can I help you? So that's probably the best advice I can give is just ask, how can I help?
That's really great advice, you know, because it's...
Thanks, Gary.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, you know, but like we get so consumed in our day-to-day routines and sometimes, you know, we hang out with our friends and things like that. We never even think that, you know, there's people in this world that are experiencing something like that. So it's just purely, you know, not knowing that, you know, or not having friends around that are experiencing this, you know. So that I think that's why I sort of asked that question. It's because I'm just curious, you know, in case in the future, you know, if I do experience some of that. If I can do, you know, I want to be able to help as well. So,
yeah.
Awesome. So changing gears a little bit, let's talk about your book, right? So I saw your book at Demux the other day. I sent you a text a couple of months ago and, you know, congratulations on getting the book out. And I've seen the reviews of people that have read it. I've briefly read it as well. And, you know, people love your book and they want to know more about you, the book. And like, so I guess the first question is, what inspired you to write that book and why did you write it?
So the book is called How to Break Up with Friends from Friend Shit to Friend Split. So that kind of answers your question. You know, I usually give two questions when people ask, why did you write this book? And the first answer is, well, I'm a neuropsychologist, so I love relationships. I love the science of relationships. And I love how fascinating it is to find out what is the neurobiological consequences of being exposed to somebody who is toxic over a long period of time. And there's a lot, and we don't know about it. So I want to talk about that. I want people to know, hey, this is really toxic for you on a neurological level, and let's talk about it in a funny way that's approachable.
Right.
Second reason I give is that I have experienced friendship.
I think all of us have. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so, most people have experienced a little bit of friendship once or twice in their lives.
Yeah,
if not now.
Yeah, 100%. So you know, how does one go like identifying a couple of things, right? Like, I don't know, call it like. Symptoms. I don't know how do you say that, like a couple of traits maybe, like you know, if you like, until you tell that to a person, you know, like it's one of those things, until you tell that to a person they don't know that, you know. And once you tell them, they can't unsee something, right? Like
I think
yeah,
how to identify it, friendship. that is a great question, and we do kind of go into that in depth in the book. And I think you and I would be here all day if we listed all of the toxic behaviors that a friend can participate in.
Yeah.
Like, some of them are really obvious, Neil, and they'll slap you in the face like a wet fish. Like, they're really obvious behaviors. Like, they're bullying you, they swear at you, they call you names, maybe they push you. They're really obvious ones.
Yeah.
And some of the behaviors are really covert. They're really sneaky. They're really subtle. And you don't realize it's happened until, you know, you're lying awake at night going like, hang on a minute. Like, have I signed up to drive this person to the airport again? Why did I agree to give them money? I can't even afford that myself. And, you know, you're lying awake going, how did that happen again? Like, I'm feeling crummy again. So I think the biggest and best signpost that I can sort of point out as a quick and easy is what's the feeling? So what is the feeling that you're walking away from the interaction with? So if you, in the lead up to the interaction, feel really scared and apprehensive because you never know who you're going to get with that friend, you know, Dr. Jekyll or Dr. Hyde or Mr. Jekyll,
yeah.
Jekyll or Hyde. Or if during the interaction, you're feeling awful and you're feeling embarrassed and you're feeling humiliated, or after the interaction, you walk away feeling worse than before you went into the interaction, that right. is a really good signpost that something is not right with that friend and maybe right. being quite toxic to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have a really good follow-up question. And, you know, so how do you know that it's your friend and it's not you, right? Because maybe you're having a bad day.
I love that question. That is a really good one. And that's the mark. That's kind of the hallmark of somebody who's got good emotional intelligence. Because sometimes right. we all make mistakes. Like, I don't think that anybody, this is my opinion, I don't think that anybody wakes up in the morning and goes like, whose life am I going to ruin today?
Yep.
Like, people don't intentionally want to hurt other people. It just, people aren't bad. They just do bad things sometimes, right? We all make mistakes. All of us make mistakes.
Yeah.
It's whether you have that integrity to recognize when you've made a mistake and own it and sincerely, genuinely apologize and change. And the problem is when somebody's engaging in repeated toxic behavior. So in right. the book, we have a lot of like questionnaires and we have a lot of very challenging kind of passages and questions for you to kind of think about, well, what have I contributed to this situation? Whether it's, you know, maybe some passive aggressive behavior you're engaging in, or more importantly, why do you continue to let yourself be treated so poorly by somebody? And that can be because, you know, you maybe you're afraid you're never going to find a good friend again. Maybe you're afraid to be alone. There is a lot of internal investigation we have to do to figure out why are we staying in these toxic relationships ourselves.
Right.
So it can be hard, it can be challenging, but it's always worthwhile. The person who does the work, if you do the emotional work and you do the introspection and you look inside yourself, you never regret that hard work. No one ever regrets learning. No one ever regrets learning and learning about yourself. That's the best learning you could possibly do in life.
Wow, that's great advice as well. I think
my job.
For sure. I think I think it's so important, you know, like you said as well, identifying who you are first and your own emotions. And I think as you grow as a human, I think working on your emotional intelligence and things like that, you know, I think that helps identify as well. Like certain traits in you and then certain traits, you know, like through the questionnaire, you know, hopefully in your book, you can also help identify those things to say who is a toxic friend or is this relationship toxic or not and so on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, you know, say now that you've identified a friend who you know for a fact that, okay, this is not the friend that I want to spend a lot of time with, you know. So, you know, do you then cut them off straight away or do you sort of like, you know, do it gradually, you know, or do you, you know, like, because some yeah. for some people it's, you know, like it depends on the person, right? For some people it can be like, okay, yeah, we've cut it, that's it. Whereas some people, you know, may think that, okay, we don't want to burn the bridges. So how do you navigate through those things?
Yeah, that is that's a great question, Neil. You could literally write a book about it.
Yeah.
Like, that's a really good question. How the heck do you break up with these friends?
Yeah.
And you know, the quick and dirty answer is that I like to give is like, never do it in the heat of the moment. Never do it in the heat of the moment. Ever.
Right.
So, you know, if you're five cocktails down and Karen's just insulted your outfit for the 15th time that evening, that is not the time to break up with Karen. Do not do it in the heat of the moment.
Right.
The whole premise of, you know, good psychological health and being a responsible, good person is operating with integrity. Operating with integrity. And that's the word that I kind of put behind everything that I do. If I act with integrity, then I'm sure that no matter what I do, based on the available information at the time, I acted in the way that I thought was the most respectful and the most appropriate. And so long as I do that, I know I can hold my head up high if I ever walk down the street and happen to bump into that person in the future. So the idea with the book is, you know, we go through a bit of behavioral analysis with you, and I'm a neuropsychologist, and one of the things we do is behavioral analysis. So I take you through identifying what is the behavior they're doing? When does it occur? Why does it occur, do you think? And when it happens, what you can do about it. The idea is that you have called it out and you're actually communicating with that person ages ago, before you get to the breakup, that you've communicated with them, please don't do X again because it hurt my feelings. So you've said that to them. So by the time you've given them that opportunity to change, and if they haven't changed, that's when you want to engage in the breakup. Now, the actual breakup itself, so many ways you can do a breakup. In the book, we talk about whether you want to do it face-to-face and the reasons for and against that, and the reasons you might want to do it over the phone or over text and the reasons for and against that. And we also even do some scripts of what you can say to that person.
Right.
Of how to break it off with them. But at the end of the day, like, I can't emphasize this point enough. You need to think about these things carefully and not do these things in the heat of the moment, because that's when you get in a pickle.
Right. So basically you want to take your time, analyze, cool down, and then I like sort of rationalize first. And then if it all makes sense, and if you still want to do it, then there's multiple ways to then go about
Operate with integrity.
Got it.
It's a good word.
100%. And so the other thing is, you know, like, once you've then sort of broken up with your friend, then how do you sort of cope up with, you know, any FOMO that you may have, right? Which is fear of missing out, you know, because you're like, oh, I haven't spoken to this friend in so long. You know, because especially if you're friends for a really long time, then you might feel like, okay, I hope this person, you know, we haven't spoken, but I still hope that they're doing okay. And you know, how do you cope up with like the post breakup?
That's a great question. I love that question. Not many people have asked me, how do I cope after the breakup? Breakups are really hard. And break up with a friend, this is the thing we often misconstrue. They can be as heartbreaking as a breakup with a partner. And the thing about emotional pain is people often, they don't count it. They don't really think it's as valid as physical pain. Like if you broke your arm, everyone would be like, oh, mate, are you okay? Let me help you carry those bags. But if you have a broken heart, nobody can see that. You know, nobody's saying like, oh, mate, are you okay? Let me help you. Let me buy you a coffee. People don't see it unless you tell them. So in your brain, physical pain is experienced in the same area as emotional pain. So emotional pain and physical pain light up the same part of your brain. So your brain can't really tell the difference between a physical and an emotional pain. They can hurt just as much as one another. So it's what you're feeling is as valid and as real as if someone had kicked you in the shin. It hurts. It really hurts. So sometimes the advice is as literal as taking some Panadol, because your body is being flooded with stress hormones and you're feeling really crummy, because physiologically you're feeling the side effects of heartbreak, and that sucks. Another part of that is just recognizing that it does hurt sometimes. It does really hurt. But I like to point out the space that you have now gained by removing a toxic influence in your life is going to be filled with something different and something better. And that fear that you have of maybe I'm going to be alone now, and what am I going to do now? What am I going to fill my time with now? That fear is keeping you tied to these toxic friends who essentially are taking your time, money, and energy. So you cannot redistribute that time and energy to a friend who will actually treat you with kindness.
Right.
So the idea is that, well, you've got this free space now in your life, and you can fill that free space with whatever you like. You can fill it with meeting new friends. You can fill it with doing something for yourself and developing some of your own hobbies. And it's also okay to fill it with a bit of time to just heal and do a bit of self-care and take care of yourself. It's okay if it hurts for a while, because heartbreak hurts. It does.
Wow. There's so much in there. I have to, like, you know, when we edit the podcast, we're going to like chop it up into these 1 minute sort of like gold nuggets.
Heartbreak sucks, guys. It does. I'm not going to lie to you. It sucks. It really sucks. That's why we stay with crummy friends, because we don't want to feel hurt. But, you know, it's that short term pain you're trying to avoid is causing you a lot of really long term pain.
Wow. There's a lot in there for sure. So, you know, transitioning into your app, right? Can you tell us what your app's about? I know what it's about, but for the listeners.
You know what it's about.
Yeah.
It's called Assert Yourself. And it's essentially based on, I realize, like, a lot of people I talk to have lost the ability to hear their own gut instinct, their own intuition about what's right and what's wrong for them, and making a choice that's in their best interest. And what happens when you've gone through a period of like stress, environmental stresses from a friend, a family member, whatever it is in your life, if you've been put through a lot of stress from that person, your fight and flight system is on overdrive, constantly pumping out stress hormones. You've got stress, anxiety, sadness screaming in your head, and it actually disconnects us from that quieter whisper that we hear deep down, which is your gut instinct, your intuition about what's right for you, what's in your best interest for the long term, which might not be driving that person to the airport because you can't actually afford the petrol money. It might not be buying that person the really expensive present because you can't actually afford that and you need to spend that money on yourself. It might be saying no to helping that person move houses because you're desperate for sleep, or you have an assignment that's due that's really, really important. Why are you not saying no to these people? Why do you keep giving and giving and giving and burning yourself out and then feeling that sense of regret? Why did I do that again? I wish I didn't do that. I wish I didn't commit to that. And that deep sense of regret when we agree to do something that we actually didn't want to do. So the idea with the Assert Yourself app is that it's like 2-3 minute meditations that you can whip out and pull out in the heat of the moment when somebody's pressuring you to do something you don't want to do. You can pop off to the bathroom and go sit in the cubicle for 3 minutes and take some time to reconnect, because your fight and flight, your brain has disconnected. It's disconnected you from your ability to hear what's right for you. Right. And you need to calm that down so you can reconnect and listen to it before you go committing to anything.
Understood. Wow. So, you know, just taking an example, right? So you've got someone, I guess this goes back to the book and it's kind of related to the app as well, right? So say if you've got into a situation where you're driving your friend to the airport and you can't, you know, afford it. And say if your friend is still expecting you to drive there, because, you know, that's where you've been done. And now they sort of expect it from you that, yeah, nah, they'll drive it. So how do you break that cycle? How do you come out of it?
Yeah, that's the key question, isn't it?
Yeah.
We form, your brain is like a really lazy organ, Neil. It's actually quite lazy. It's always looking for shortcuts. It's always looking for the most effective way of doing things. And that means it's going to make patterns in pathways in your brain, which means that if you have learned that you're never allowed to say no and you must always say yes and do things you don't want to do in order to survive in your environment, emotionally, physically, whatever it is, then you've got this very strong pathway in your brain that's pumping out, I must say yes, I must say yes, I must say yes, I must give, 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 give. and never say no to these people. So that's a really strong response. And we get really anxious. I don't know if you get this, but I certainly did, where the idea of saying, no, sorry, I'm not able to help you.
Yeah.
Oh, so anxiety provoking. So anxiety, because my instinct was, of course I can help you. Let me help you. Yes, please let me help you, because I couldn't possibly ever risk annoying anyone. So it's sort of, part of it is seeing that pathway for what it is, which is this network that has become ingrained in your brain. Like, there will have been people in your life who have said no to you in the past, right?
Yeah.
And sit around, yeah, like we think about it now, you don't sit around ruminating about every single time a person said no to you. They just weren't able to help at that time and you've let it go. It's the same for you. If you need to say no sometimes, that individual isn't going to hold it against you for the rest of your life. And if they did hold it against you, they're probably a toxic friend. They're probably toxic. Yeah. It is not selfish. It is not selfish to put your mental health first. It is not selfish to say no. And I think people think they might have this pathway in their brain that's telling them, if I say no, I'm a selfish person. And that's right. Your brain tricking you. You're being brainwashed by your own brain.
That's crazy. So you know, like, what's one sort of, like, just a quick sort of high level tip on saying no to someone? Say, like, you know, I know a lot of people, and I'm guilty of it myself sometimes, is, you know, I just say yes to everything because if I don't, then, you know, it's like I'm not doing enough or whatever. And so, you know, what's a polite way to just say, sorry, I can't do it, you know?
Well, I love that you asked that. A really quick and easy go-to. And in the app, I actually give you a whole bunch of lines that you can use to get out of things or to say no to things. And there's even a button you can click and you can hear it said for you in a nice, calm voice so you can copy it. So a really good go-to saying is just don't give them an answer. If you're too scared to say no in the moment, and you don't have to give them a yes or no in the moment, especially if you find that anxiety provoking, a really great middle ground is to just say, I'm going to have a think about that and I will let you know my answer later. So if you can learn to just not do the automatic, okay, yeah, I'll do it. You're too scared to say no. And just find that middle ground where you say, I'm not going to give you an answer just yet. I'm going to have a think about it and I'll give you an answer later, because it's a lot easier when you're driving home to text them when you get home and say, actually, I'm sorry, I don't have the time to commit to that, or I don't have the money to commit to that right now. So that's a good get out of jail free card, is just delay answering if you can resist the urge to say the immediate yes.
Right. So, but does that make you a bit sneaky or not really?
Well, look, it's a good transition. A good transition. I think I would be lying and I'd be remiss if I said to you, Neil, you just need to say no. Just de-click them and say no. That's probably, it's too extreme. We can't swing like a pendulum from always saying yes to everything to suddenly being super assertive and saying no to everything. That's probably not realistic. You need to gradually transition till you feel comfortable to say no. And a good transition place to be, if you find it anxiety provoking to say no, is to just don't give your answer yet. So you're not saying yes, but nor are you saying no immediately.
Understood.
And I think another good caveat on that is, just because you've already said yes to something does not mean that you can't back out of it. Just because something's already happened does not mean that you can't then contact that person and say, I wasn't happy that that happened and I don't want it to happen again. So don't feel like the deal is sealed once it's, you know, it's written in concrete and it can never be undone if you've already said yes. You are allowed to change your mind. You are allowed to say, I'm sorry, in hindsight, I've reflected more and I can't actually do that. Or in hindsight, I've thought about what happened and I really don't want that to happen again because it made me uncomfortable. You're allowed to do that.
Cool. I think that's, that's, again, you know, like, there's so much that I'm getting out of this. Yeah, absolutely.
It's really read the book.
It's really blowing my mind, you know. So where can, you know, our viewers or listeners find you?
I'm called the No Bull Psych, so I'm at No Bull Psych on Instagram, and my book's available at all good bookshops, so Dimmix, Big W. It's also on Audible, so if you want to listen to it instead of reading it, you can also listen to it on Audible, and I'm at www.hannahcorral.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Hannah, for being on the show, and
questions.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun, and I think everyone's going to get a huge kick out of this.
Big truth bombs. Yeah, some truth bombs.
For sure. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to go back thinking, and you know, they're gonna get a lot of value out of it, and also hopefully it helps them navigate through some tricky waters as well.
Absolutely. And if they take one thing from this, it's to know you're actually not alone. It's super common to feel this way. And what that means is, there are ways out of this, because many, many, many people have been where you are now, and you can find your way out of it.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much. Cheers.
Thanks, Nia. Cheers.
Hey guys, thank you so much for checking it out. I hope you really liked it and enjoyed it. If you want to find out more about Dr. Hannah, you can go to @NoBullPsych on Instagram. And if you want to find out more about myself, you can check it out at Neil Growth Marketing on Instagram. So until next time, see you later.